Web Radio. We're going to do something a little different today. We've never done this before, but we figure, what the heck, we'll try it. And the reason that we're trying it is that
on the America's,
something came along in a show, Doctor's Lounge, last week that has really bothered me, and it's so important. It's called CON, and that stands for Certificate of Need. This is a show that everybody must listen to. It is that important. It's the government's way of building monopolies, and it's both local, state, and federal. You've got to listen to this show, and that's the reason that we're taking the time out from the Dan and Dave show for you to listen to this and let us know what you think. We're going to join the show In Progress on America's Web Radio, and here we go with the Doctor's Lounge.
It's just celebrated its third anniversary recently. We each week, along with my co-host Dr. Mike, we alternate bringing you stories about healthcare news and healthcare issues that are affecting what kind of healthcare you can get, and all the other issues that are influencing healthcare decisions in this country. The Doctor's Lounge is brought to you by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation. The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is a free market healthcare think tank. It's the only healthcare think tank that is run and operated by actively practicing physicians. And it's important, if you like what you hear on this podcast, on this show, that you support the Docs for Patient Care Foundation. Each week we send out newsletters so you can hear about these shows in advance. If you want to hear about them, you need to get on our mailing list. You need to go to www.docs4patientcarefoundation.org or d4pcfoundation.org. You do not have to support us, although if you want us to continue to bring you these kinds of shows, you need to send us $10, $25, $1,000, whatever you feel comfortable with. It's tax deductible. It's a investment in your healthcare future by having groups like ours out there working for you. So please give generously and help the Docs for Patient Care Foundation. The issues that I have been talking about over the last few shows has centered on a very important under-the-radar issue for most Americans, and it is very important because, unbeknownst to most people, the issue that we're going to discuss today, Certificate of Need, is indirectly, and in some cases directly, influencing the cost of health care, how much you are actually being charged for your care. Now, most people are not paying directly for their care. They get it through an insurance company, they get it through their business, but ultimately you are paying for it. And there are many factors that come into play that influence the cost of health care, something that this whole health care debate has failed to address. Everything that we're hearing nonstop on TV, on radio, reading about in the papers, is centered on healthcare insurance. So don't for one second think that this is actually about healthcare. It's about the healthcare insurance industry, and there's a big disconnect between the cost of care and healthcare insurance. Certificate of need laws are something that we've talked about on this show, and with my guest this morning, we'll get into and have him explain it from his point of view. My guest this morning is Jim Manley, who is a senior attorney at the Goldwater Institute in Arizona, and Jim is a very gifted attorney who is experienced in healthcare and certificate of need. And last week he represented two doctors in Georgia and their fight against the state of Georgia and their battle to try to push back against Georgia's certificate of need laws. So without taking away anything from your talk today, Jim, or our discussion, let me first introduce you and welcome you into the Doctor's Lounge.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, great, and it's our privilege to have you with us. And Jim, had talked. I recently had the privilege of personally meeting Jim Manley in Washington during a conference that the Docs for Patient Care Foundation put on regarding certificate of need laws. So, before we, sometimes we get people here, Jim, who are new listeners or who may be regular listeners but don't fully understand the issues. So can you set up certificate of need for everybody and just explain what this is all about?
Sure. Yeah. What we the shorthand that we use to describe certificate of need, and this is a policy that exists in a number of industries, including the medical industry. But the shorthand that we use is competitor's veto, because that is really what it amounts to. It is extra permission that you need from the state and from your competitors in order to expand your services. So, you've got your medical license. You have your medical education, obviously. In some cases, in my client's case, they're even able to set up some medical facilities. But if they want to go beyond a certain threshold and offer more care or more care to more doctors, more availability of care to more doctors and patients, then they need to get this certificate of need approval. And really what it boils down to is, will your new services negatively impact competitors? And they use all sorts of euphemisms for that in the law, but that is what it boils down to. And we can talk about how the evidence supports that conclusion, but you can just look at the plain text of the law, and every consideration that in Georgia that the Department of Community Health looks at involves that basic question: how will this service impact competitors? And if you're expanding care in a way that takes away from the profit of the hospital across the street, then chances are your application is going to be denied. And it's a tragedy. It's denying access to care to countless people, and it's really tragic that these con laws put the revenues of the hospitals ahead of the well-being of patients.
Okay, so just in a nutshell, certificate of need laws started out in the 1960s. It was an idea that was generated by hospitals and by nursing homes in New York to try to protect their turf against competitors that wanted to pluck away patients that the hospitals believed were better paying patients. This idea spread around the country to other states. Eventually, the federal government looked at this and believed the prevailing dogma at that time that this would actually help to save money and be better allocation of resources. So the federal government gave states money, incentivized them to set up these laws. 10 years later, they realized that these laws did not save money and that the reasons for doing certificate of need were actually not correct. So they withdrew the money. Some states repealed their laws, most didn't, and today we still have 35 states in the District of Columbia that have laws in place that mean that if doctors or other individuals want to set up facilities in healthcare, we specifically talk about healthcare in this show, that they have to make an application to their state, and the state has to approve it, and before the approval is granted, they have the opportunity. Competing businesses, hospitals or laboratories or imaging centers, have the ability to veto that certificate of need, and so this is essentially the anti-competitive nature of what is going on. Is that pretty much sum it up, Jim?
Yeah, it's a great summary, and it's these laws. Like I said, they do apply to other industries, and in those industries, the laws are much more explicitly anti-competitive. They're designed to regulate natural monopolies in many cases, and so the policy is much more upfront when you have a certificate of need for an oil pipeline, for example, or a power line. The policy is to decide which one company can control this natural monopoly. That's why they have certificate of need in those industries. But in the healthcare industry, there are no natural monopolies. There's actually quite a bit of competition in states that don't have certificate of need. And wouldn't you know, that lowers costs, increases access to care, increases quality. But as you point out, the federal government got involved in this in the 1970s and mandated certificate of need laws in states as a condition of Medicaid funding. And that made a little bit of sense at the time because of the way Medicaid reimbursements were done. The way it was done encouraged providers to spend more, whether or not that care was necessarily required. That was the thinking, at least. And so the federal government stepped in and said, no, you can't build more hospital beds just to increase the amount of reimbursements you're getting from Medicare. Medicaid. The problem with that is that it didn't work, as you point out, and the federal government realized this. The FTC realized that this was restricting competition in the healthcare industry, and the Department of Justice agreed, that the antitrust division, because again, this is an anti-competitive regulation. And so both those entities, the FTC and the Department of Justice Antitrust Division, have been, since the 1980s, requesting that states repeal these laws and correct this mistake that the federal government forced on the states. And they've taken quite an active role. It's really surprising the level of involvement they've had in terms of providing testimony when bills do come up to repeal certificate of need, which happens very rarely because of the power of the hospital lobby. And the FTC especially has been a strong proponent of eliminating certificate of need laws because they have a negative effect on the healthcare market. And that's a policy from Reagan through Obama to Trump now. Every administration since 1986 has pursued a policy of repealing certificate of need laws.
I had no idea. We're coming up to a hard break in just a minute, but Jim, what I wanted you to do in the next segment is explain to our listeners how you got involved in the Georgia case, what the Georgia certificate of need challenge was, and elaborate a bit on that. So when we get back in the next segment in the Doctor's Lounge, that's what we're going to talk about. So please stay with us.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your health care freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Did you miss the show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. My guest is Jim Manley, senior attorney at the Goldwater Institute. We are talking about certificate of need. There's a legal challenge in Georgia that Jim is in the middle of, and we're going to talk about that right now. So what's the what happened in Georgia, Jim?
Yeah, so we represent two doctors who own a surgery center outside of in Cartersville, which is just north of Atlanta, and they own the surgery center, and because they don't have a certificate of need, only those two doctors, Dr. Rebo and Dr. Barfield, and their full-time employees are allowed to operate there. So what that means is they've got this surgery center. It's an outpatient laparoscopic surgery center. So they can do stuff that probably doesn't surprise the doctors who are listening, but just amazing surgeries that they can do outpatient, where a woman can come in for a hysterectomy and walk out under her own power the next day. Or the
same day, day. Same day.
It's amazing. And so they've got this great center. It's warm. It's inviting. Their infection rate has been zero since they opened. It's a place that's designed to do surgery, and so it's very good for that. So they've got doctors who are knocking on their door asking them to use the surgery center because it's such a great facility, and they're wonderful surgery centers all across the country that have these advantages. But without a certificate of need, they cannot allow other doctors to use the facility. So they're OBGYNs, my clients, and they've got a thriving practice aside from their surgery center. And so on the days of the month when they're busy delivering babies or on call, the surgery center sits empty. So they applied for a certificate of need to just allow other doctors to use the facility when it's sitting there empty. And they had to spend around $20,000 on this application in terms of application fees and paying a consultant to help navigate the ridiculously complex regulations that go along with certificate need laws.
And time away from their practice.
Absolutely. And time away from the practice that, to be honest, the questions that they were getting from the department just demonstrated that the department wasn't really taking their application seriously. They would get requests for information that was already included in their application. It had the appearance of a show application.
And this hurts patients because it takes away these doctors from this small community. There aren't that many OBGYNs in this community.
Yeah, well, and it really is tragic. I'm not being dramatic when I say that, because these laws, in every time they're applied, whether it's this context where it takes a doctor out of his practice and forces him to spend his day dealing with bureaucrats, or in this application where it's preventing doctors from using this great facility because competitors object. And as I said in the last segment, we call these certificate of need laws competitors' veto laws, and that's exactly what happened here. The hospital across the street, as well as a couple of other hospitals in the area, objected to the doctor's application for a certificate of need. Their only reason for objecting was that there was no need to have another surgery, to have access to another surgery center in the Cartersville area. They had extra capacity, and so they weren't about to let a competitor come in and try to offer a better product. And it's really astonishing the way that the Department of Community Health phrased its final decision. And what the department said was, because the surgery center was not already operating at capacity, it couldn't allow other doctors to operate there. Now think about that for a second, right? That's an impossible standard.
Right.
But that is the basis for the department's decision to deny the certificate of need and force my clients to let their surgery center sit idle. Now, that left them really with only one choice, which was to challenge this whole ridiculous idea that you need to ask your competitors for approval in order to open a new business or expand an existing business.
How did Goldwater Institute get involved?
Well, we've been looking at the certificate of need issue for quite some time, and one of the challenges in public interest litigation is finding plaintiffs who are willing to stand up and take on the regulators who have the power of life and death over their business. And so when we met Dr. Rebo, and he explained the situation and explained his will to fight for the right outcome, we jumped on that opportunity to represent them and to try to bring some sanity to the healthcare market in Georgia and hopefully across the country. And that's really a critical part too, is that a lot of people see the error of certificate of need or the other anti-competitive laws that we fight against, but even if someone sees the error of an anti-competitive law, some folks are willing to let the law just exist if they can get theirs. So if they can get an exception, if they can get their certificate granted, then they're happy enough to just continue on their way and take advantage of the competitive advantages that these laws provide. But Dr. Rebo and Dr. Barfield were not willing to do that. They thought it was wrong that there's a regulation that requires competitor approval for a new business, even if it might help them in certain situations, keeping competition out. Their view is, let another surgery center open up in the parking lot across from us. That's great. We can compete with them. We can offer better prices. We can offer better care. And I mean, I think that tells you all you need to know about what the true impact of these laws are. It's stifling care. And there's some numbers to back that up, too, we can talk about.
Okay, So this case, it proceeded through the lower courts, and they got thwarted along the way. Is that right? You took the case, pled the case, you argued this case in lower courts in Georgia, and eventually. It made its way all the way up to the Georgia Supreme Court.
Yeah, and I'll give you a little bit of background on the trial court, because it was interesting. The state fought tooth and nail to even prevent this case from being heard. They raised all sorts of procedural objections, and we litigated those issues, just the question of whether we could go into court for over a year before we actually got into the substance of the case. And we actually even went up to the Georgia Supreme Court, and the court sent the case back down to the lower court without a decision, and essentially said, you can't avoid deciding this issue, and forced the lower court to make a decision on the merits. And unfortunately, the lower court decided against us. The Georgia Alliance of Community Hospitals tried to get involved in the case as an intervener, so that means that they tried to get involved as a full party in the case so that they could essentially slow things down. And it was interesting, the reason that they cited for getting involved in the case was to protect the revenues of their members. That was explicitly their reason for getting involved, to stop quote-unquote cherry-picking. And so our objection to them getting involved was that their only interest in the certificate of need laws is preventing competition. And that is the only thing that the certificate of need laws do, and so the state is capable of defending those laws on their own. And the court agreed with us, which is pretty peculiar for a court to keep a party like the Georgia Alliance of Community Hospitals out of a case, and it really reveals again what the con laws are all about, which is protecting the revenues of existing hospitals. So the alliance continued to file briefs as an amicus and try to gum up the works, but ultimately the trial court ruled against us, and so we appealed to the Georgia Supreme Court, we just had oral argument on the 26th of June.
And what was the major argument or point that you argued in this case?
So one of the strategies that the Goldwater Institute uses in our litigation is to look to state constitutions to protect rights that the federal courts have sort of left behind.
Jim, we have 1 minute. We have 1 minute to a hard break. So I'm gonna.
Okay. That's a good preview, really, to what we argued, which is that the Georgia Constitution protects against these sorts of anti-competitive laws, and in fact, the Georgia Supreme Court in the past has enforced these protections to strike down some very powerful anti-competitive laws that protected some very powerful lobbies, and we can get into more detail about that as we go on. But that's the key here is that the Georgia Constitution and the constitutions of many states have additional protections that the federal courts just don't recognize anymore, and that can be really powerful tools to strike back against laws like certificate of need.
Outstanding. We'll develop that in the next segment, so stay with us in the Doctor's Lounge.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your health care freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back into the Doctor's Lounge. I'm your host, Dr. Hal Schurz. My guest this week is Jim Manley from the Goldwater Institute, senior attorney there. We're talking about the case in Georgia of Hugo Rebo and Malcolm Barfield, who sued the state of Georgia on over their certificate of need laws, and Jim Manley argued this case on their behalf, and we had gotten to what the strategy for arguing this case was in Georgia and may be around the country. So, Jim, I guess you are like a modern-day trust buster.
Yeah, I suppose, except the trusts these days are created by the government. That is what certificate of need laws do. They create these, they create monopoly power in existing businesses. And so that's why we looked to a provision of the Georgia Constitution that was designed to fight these government-created monopolies. And it's generally referred to as an anti-monopoly clause. And it's a feature of many state constitutions. It's a little bit hard to tell how many states have a functioning monopoly clause, because many courts have not enforced their anti-monopoly clauses in a really robust way. Georgia has, and so that's part of the reason that we brought the case in Georgia the way that we did, relying on the state constitution.
Okay.
Because Georgia has a strong tradition of striking down these sorts of laws that are designed for only one purpose, which is to protect existing businesses from competition. And you can get a sense of how seriously Georgia takes its constitutional protections against monopoly by looking at some of the landmark cases in this area. The two most important cases are cases involving auto dealers' monopolies. And If you know anything about politics, especially state and local politics, the auto dealers monopoly, the auto dealers lobby is incredibly powerful, and so that's why they were able to get laws in place, and that are still in place in most states, protecting auto dealers from competition. And it's really striking that these laws in Georgia operated very much like the certificate of need law in the healthcare context. So the state is carved up into different regions in both laws. And then in order for a manufacturer to add another dealership, or in the case of a certificate of need, for a medical facility, like a surgery center, to bring in independent doctors, the existing company needs to get approval from competitors. So other dealerships have to sign off on the new dealership. Other medical facilities have to sign off on the new services that are being provided. And the Georgia Supreme Court, these laws were challenged in the 1970s in the auto dealer context. And the Georgia Supreme Court took a look at the Constitution and applied it as written to strike down these laws because they tend to discourage competition and increase monopoly power. And that's a striking thing for the court to determine that a law protecting such a powerful lobby was unconstitutional was really, it's a landmark case, and it it applies just perfectly in our situation here with certificate of need laws. And so if the court is still willing to take a strong principled stand for the Constitution, we should see a similar outcome here. Now, there's an unhappy coda to the auto dealer story. As I said, the auto dealers are very powerful politically. And to give you a sense of how powerful they are, when they lost in the Georgia Supreme Court, they went and got an exception added to the Georgia Constitution to protect them and to allow them to have anti-competitive laws. And so they were able to maintain their monopoly through their political power.
Could that happen in this kind of case?
After the Georgia Supreme Court, after the Georgia Supreme Court decided that the Georgia Constitution prohibits creating auto dealer monopolies, the auto dealers went to the voters and asked them to amend the Constitution to add an exception for auto dealers for franchise agreements.
So
they were able to weasel out from the decision of the Georgia Supreme Court.
Interesting.
I'm hopeful that will be less likely here, despite the political power of the hospital lobby. If the Georgia Supreme Court applies the Constitution and strikes down the certificate of need laws, there is a tremendous body of research helped by, as I said earlier, the Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice, but also the folks over at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University have been doing tremendous work in this area, demonstrating that people are dying because of these certificate of need laws. And for the hospitals to be able to go to the voters and say, protect our profits in the face of all of that evidence, I think it's going to be very difficult for them to make that case. Obviously not impossible, but the research in this area is just striking about the negative effects of certificate of need laws.
So how do you feel your case went?
Oral argument is kind of a funny thing. If you've never listened to one and you need to fall asleep at night, you can find it on the Georgia Supreme Court's website. But it's essentially it's 20 minutes of question and answer from the court. There are nine justices on the Georgia Supreme Court, and each lawyer presents for 20 minutes, and most of that presentation is taken up by the justices asking questions. And it's always difficult to predict how a case is going to turn out based on oral argument, because sometimes judges will play devil's advocate, and so they may ask difficult questions of one side simply to test the theory that they will ultimately adopt, but their questions suggest the opposite. So it's hard to read into it, but one thing that I was really happy to see is that the Georgia Supreme Court was engaged. We got questions from the majority of the judges, and they understood the issue, and they understood the implications of it. There was one particularly remarkable exchange with the government's attorney, and several of the justices asked, if we decide that the Georgia Constitution allows the state to give a monopoly to a particular hospital or a particular group of hospitals, what's to stop us from approving a monopoly for grocery stores? Giving an entire region over to Kroger and another region over to Publix and so on and so forth. And the government attorney, to her credit, was honest and said nothing would stop that. If you authorize a monopoly here, the state can monopolize any industry it likes. And let me tell you, as soon as she answered that question, then just like a machine gun, other justices started asking the same question in different ways. I think they were astonished at her answer. I certainly was. I think it's, as I said, I think it's honest, but I think it really demonstrates the principle at stake here, which is, does the state have a policy of protecting existing businesses from competition, or does it have a policy of allowing the market to provide services at the best possible price and the best possible quality to the public? And so the justices started asking questions about whether you could monopolize the housing industry or the clothing industry. And to all these questions, the government attorney answered yes. The state essentially has no limit on its power to create monopolies, as long as the state can come up with some pretense that justifies creating a monopoly. Then the law is powerless to stop the legislature. And that, I think, was the most remarkable thing that happened at oral argument, and gives me the most hope that we will get a good decision from the Georgia Supreme Court.
In the event that that doesn't happen, are there federal statutes that are anti-monopoly, FTC-based, that supersede states?
Well, that's the difficult thing. The Certificate of Need laws have actually prevented the FTC from enforcing federal antitrust laws because combinations in interstate and trade that the FTC has tried to go after are explicitly authorized by the con laws. And so you get into a couple of different problems. One, that it's very difficult to unwind a monopoly that's been approved by state regulators, because technically it can be illegal under state law to do that. And so it becomes very difficult, if not impossible, for the FTC to actually enforce the federal antitrust laws in a meaningful way in this context. And the other problem that you run into is that the states are exempted from the federal antitrust laws. And so states can authorize monopolies. And so that is really the central problem with relying on federal law to fix this problem. And it really should be a problem that the federal government fixes, since it started this problem in the first place by mandating Certificate of Need laws in the 1970s. It's not something that
well, they have no appetite to do it.
Has fixed.
Right. You know, there are people who are much smarter than I who have proposed that the federal government does get involved with this and try to rectify the mistake that they made. And one way would be to now, in this climate of health care reform, in trying to reform, so to speak, try to tie Medicaid block grants to the states that they're trying to that many governors are now addicted to, and tie it to reversing the Certificate of Need laws.
It would certainly be a poetic solution, given that is almost precisely how the con laws came into
exactly.
existence in all the states. The federal government required these laws in order for states to qualify for Medicaid funding, and all the states needed to have these laws in place by 1980 in order to not lose their funding Georgia passed its law in 1979.
No. of course. Well, you know what, Jim?
Of course.
We've got our last hard break. I want to tie up all the loose ends in our last segment. So stay with us when we get back into the doctor's lounge again.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is Lawyer Liz. Join me each week as we discuss drones, the Internet of Things, and all the technology in between. It's Buzz Off with Lawyer Liz, Wednesdays at 2.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
My guest is Jim Manley from the Goldwater Institute. We're talking about certificate of need laws, and we are wrapping up the Doctor's Lounge. I'm your host, Hal Schurz. Jim, so... the case has now been argued. What is the time frame and next steps?
So the next step is the Georgia Supreme Court will issue a decision, and that could happen as early as Friday, but I don't expect that. It will more than likely take about 30 to 60 days to get a decision, but the court really has a lot of discretion to take as much time as it needs to make this decision. But the court will post on its website when the decision is going to be released, and we just have our fingers crossed until then.
Is the court influenced, Jim, by public opinion or op-eds or other efforts to try to sway public opinion?
Well, they shouldn't be, but they're people. They're members of our community, I think it's always important to try to convince a judge that they have to rule for you. But it's equally important to convince a judge that they should rule for you, and to get them to want to rule for you. If the law requires them to rule in your favor, that's great. But if their heart is telling them that it's the right decision, then that's even better.
I'll tell you why I asked. As you know, and many of our listeners know, we put on a certificate of need conference in Washington, bringing together all of the major principals who are working in this area around the country into one room to try to strategize. Jim Manley was there representing Goldwater Institute.
I thought it was a very productive meeting. It was tremendous to have all those folks in one room, and I thank you guys for putting that on. I think it's a big step in the right direction.
Well, thank you, and we are going to build on that. But the thing that I want people to understand is that this is the one area that these laws are affecting people's lives, and it's the law that nobody knows anything about, right? It's flying under the radar.
Yeah, and part of that is because it's terribly complex, and so even if you understand that these laws exist, understanding how they work is really very difficult to figure out. You know, there are arguments on the other side, and we were hit with a lot of these. But really what they boil down to is is it's not really a debate about certificate of need. It's on one side there is empirical scholarly research that shows that certificate of need laws are denying people access to care. You talked at the top of the show about just the cost of care, which is obviously a huge problem and a problem that's made worse by certificate of need laws. But there's the basic question of whether you can even get care. And certificate of need laws, the evidence shows, makes it more difficult to get care. And one of the reasons people say we need certificate of need is to protect rural access to care. But the problem with that argument is that in states where you don't have certificate of need, access to care is better in rural areas. These laws are not protecting rural hospitals from closing. They're preventing providers from opening new services in rural areas. And so the arguments on the other side really are based on sort of speculation and hunches that have been good enough for a long time because there hasn't really been a concerted effort to fight back against these laws. And there is now, though. And so the work, especially the economists at George Mason are doing to try to put some meat on the bones and fight back against these arguments from the other side, demonstrate that really what's happening here is that certificate of need laws are reducing access to care. They're making care more expensive, and they're reducing quality, too. The Georgia, for example, has outcomes that are 19% worse than the baseline for open heart surgery. Mm. And so that means people are dying in Georgia. And that is attributable to the certificate of need laws and the way that they prevent access to the best quality of care at the lowest prices.
You know, you mentioned the Mercatus Institute. And they did they put together a project looking at healthcare access, and they made an index based on 23 different metrics. And Georgia ranked number 51, including the District of Columbia, and that would have been another good bullet in your gun at the Supreme Court. I wish I would have talked to you about that. I don't know if you talked to them and brought that up.
Yeah, well, and one, I mean, not to get too far into the legal weeds, but one of the tragedies of this area is that the courts are extremely deferential to the bureaucrats and mm-hmm. to the legislature. And so policy arguments like this, the fact that people are dying, is technically irrelevant, especially in federal court. But it's an astonishing abdication from the courts that they're not willing to actually look at what's happened and judge laws based on how they function rather than the best intentions.
Uh-huh. So well, we've got 5 minutes, and I want to ask you two questions, and they're based on directions that this goes from here. So this is a favorable ruling. What happens in Georgia and what happens around the country, and it's an unfavorable ruling. What happens next?
Well, if it's a favorable ruling, then the healthcare market will be reinvigorated in Georgia, and folks are going to have more access to better care. That's what the data shows will happen. So you've got about 36 states that have certificate of need right now, and in the other states, what you see is just a more robust healthcare market with more options and better prices. So that's what will happen in the best case scenario. And I also think that the ruling will have a ripple effect, a positive ruling will have a ripple effect in other states that have certificate of need, and especially states that have an anti-monopoly clause or strong protections against anti-competitive laws. But even in states where the courts don't really do a good job of protecting against anti-competitive laws, I think you're going to see a ripple effect. If nothing else, it will give legislators in other states some
pause.
Potential to get some backbone.
Right.
And then if we have a negative decision, then the burden shifts to the people to ask their representatives to fix this problem. And it's like a lot of public policy issues, it's a problem of dispersed costs and concentrated benefits. So the hospital monopoly has a huge interest in maintaining these laws. And the negative impact they have on the rest of us is individually small and difficult to perceive. The fact that you have to go to the hospital for your surgery rather than going to a surgery center, you may not even know that the surgery center is an alternative. And so it's hard for folks to understand how they're being negatively impacted. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's our job, to try to educate folks and help them to understand that their health care could be better. It could be better tomorrow if the states got out of the way and stopped protecting competitors and really allowed the health care market to function in their states.
My producer and our station operator and owner is infuriated by this whole subject of state sanctioned monopolies, and is firing questions at me on cards nonstop. One question that he wanted to know is, does this issue have any national coverage?
Well, certainly, and you guys have helped push that this conversation to the national level with your op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. It's an issue that is gaining traction on the national level. I haven't heard much national policy discussion about it at the federal level, and I think that's a problem that we need to help fix.
I think you're right. So I think that I would like to urge anybody in Georgia who's listening to this to write an op-ed and do it soon, this week, and try to get it into your local papers around the state, and make a point of the Supreme Court justices in Georgia have a responsibility to protect patients in this state and not special interests. Would you agree with that approach, Jim?
Yeah, absolutely, and send a letter to just copy your legislator on that op-ed that you submit to the paper. Let the policymakers in your state know that you understand this issue and you think it's an abomination that the state is putting profits over patients and protecting competitors. That if you need more material, you can go to our website, goldwaterinstitute.org, and we have a case page about the Women's Surgical Center case that has a lot of the details that we've discussed this morning about the FTC's advocacy, about the Mercatus Center research. So that's all there to help you write an informed and persuasive op-ed.
That's perfect. I'm glad that you mentioned that. I was going to ask you to bring that up, so you beat me to the punch. Jim, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you for your hard work, your efforts in this area. I know that we're all working on this, in different directions. So thanks again, and I hope that we'll have you back here with another segment with a favorable response, and we can talk about implications at some point in the future.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Thank you, Hal, for all you do, and for Docs for Patient Care for really helping to lead the fight.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening to us today, and come back next time in the Doctor's Lounge.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.